Welcome in, sports fans. It is a Monday edition of the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Hope you had a great weekend. Lots of different sporting events happening over the weekend, so we've got a lot to get to. Talking about the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, got a little WNBA to talk about, a little College World Series. So let's just go ahead and dive into it with Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Talked about how crucial this game was going to be for Dallas. With the mentality that the Celtics had and the way the Celtics were playing so far, not only in this series, but really through the majority of the postseason, it was really going to be crucial for them to go out and get Game 2 and tie the series back up. They were not able to do that on the road in Boston. They fall 105-98, which means Boston takes that 2-0 series lead. We talked about it on Friday. You know, this game was going to be that crucial turning point in the series. We could very well see a series now that goes five games. I predicted Boston in six, but now we could see a series that ends in four or five games. Like, that's a very real possibility right now. So I think when you look at the landscape of this series, Dallas is up against the wall. There's not a lot is working for them. Luka coming out and apologizing and taking the blame for the performance overall of the team. The crazy thing about that, though, is that Luka's dropped 30 in both games of the NBA Finals series so far. It's been Kyrie. It's been all the other guys on the Dallas Mavericks who have stepped up and played so well through the postseason up until this point that have just not been playing well through the first two games of this series against Boston. Meanwhile, on the other side, you've got Boston, who is probably playing the most team-played basketball you probably have seen from any other team throughout the postseason so far. Porzingis comes in, game one, back on the court from the injury, plays out of his mind. Then in this game, you got Drew Holiday, led the Celtics in scoring. You got Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all making big plays. Somebody asked Jason Tatum, they were, you know, asking him, well, you're not scoring as much in this series. He said, I don't care. We have a chance at winning an NBA title. If my scoring goes down and I'm doing more assisting and allowing other guys to find open shots, that's fine. We have a chance to win an NBA title. Winning an NBA title is more than me scoring 30, 40 points a game. And it's that mentality right there is why the Celtics are up 2-0 in this series. Dallas is a team that played good team basketball, and that's where they got them to this point. That's what got them to this point. But they've gotten away from it. You've got Luka, who's playing the way that you expect him to play, right? Scoring 30 points a game, but you just don't have those surrounding pieces there to help lift him up and to support him. They are not playing full team basketball right now. And even Jason Kidd, after game two, said that in the press conference. He said, we've got to do a better job of having other guys on this team step up. It can't just be Luka. If it's going to be just Luka for us through this series, we are going to lose. And he's absolutely right. You've got to have the surrounding pieces around him step up and play better, especially when the team that you're battling against for an NBA championship is playing such good team basketball, top to bottom, left to right. One guy has a down game, two other guys step up in his place. When you're playing a team that's playing like that, you have to match that, or you're going to get dominated. And while maybe the Dallas Mavericks didn't lose game two as bad as they did game one, you still lost the game. And that's all that matters. There is no participation trophy. There is no moral trophy here. There's no, well, at least we didn't get beat as bad in game two as we did in game one. No, you lost the game still. You're down 0-2. That's a concern. And that's a problem if you're a Dallas Maverick fan. You can't continue to go through this and it just be Luka offensively for you. You've got to have Kyrie step up. You've got to have other guys step up. Now, the good news is for them, they do have a couple of days to kind of try to find that rhythm again. Game three is coming up in Dallas on Wednesday, and I think this is exactly what the Dallas Mavericks need. Get back home in Dallas in front of their fans. get a couple of days off to kind of figure some things out, maybe slow your brain down a little bit, rethink what's working, rethink what's not working, fix the issues that you've had so far through the first two games, and go out there, and you've got to take this series now one game at a time. Now that you are down 2-0 in this series, you have got to take it one game at a time. You can't be thinking about game four or game five. You got to think about game three. You've got to execute, and you've got to win game three, bring this series to a 2-1 advantage for Boston. Then you focus on game four and tying this series up. That's what you have to do if you're the Dallas Maverick fans, if you're Dallas Maverick. And right now, I think for the Maverick fans, just kind of take a deep breath. It sucks to be down 0-2. But if any team can come back from being down 0-2, Dallas Mavericks, one of them. They've just got to regroup and focus over these next couple of days before Game 3 on Wednesday and find how to find other people to step up when Luka is out there seemingly the only person playing well. You've got to find a way to have other guys around him step up and play better. That is my big takeaway from Game 2 heading into Game 3. The Mavericks have to find somebody to step up and support Luka, because right now the Celtics are supporting each other. That's a full, complete basketball team over there that has got each other's back, and it shows with how they play on the court. Dallas has got to find somebody. Kyrie's got to be a little bit more consistent in this series. Had a little bit of a down game. What do you have, 16 points in game two? PJ Washington had 17. Those guys have got to step up and play better. They've got to step up, play better, have Luka's back, score a little bit more for the Mavs. And if they can do that, they're going to have an opportunity to win game three. But if they still struggle and it's just Luka out there being a one-man band for Dallas, man, we could be talking about Thursday's show, how the Boston Celtics have a 3-0 lead. So, I don't know. Just one of those things that Dallas can turn things around, but they've got to start playing better basketball as a complete team to match what Boston is doing. In the NHL side of things, with the Stanley Cup Finals, Panthers take game one of that series 3-0 over the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, Bobrovsky, I've gushed over Bobrovsky all postseason long, and rightfully so. I mean, this is a guy that has just been incredible for the Florida Panthers. And you could even make the case that if he does not play the way he's played so far this year in the postseason, that the Panthers are not in the Stanley Cup Finals. But Bobrovsky has been a big, big part of the reason why they're here where they are. 32 saves last night, including 6 shots that Bobrovsky blocked coming from Connor McDavid, which is one of the best players in the NHL, by the way. 6 shots. If Connor McDavid hits 6 shots at the goal, chances are 1 or 2 of them are going to go in, right? Like 6 shots with a guy like Connor McDavid coming off of his stick, there's a good chance that there's going to be some that find the back of the net. Bobrovsky made him go 0 for 6. The guy is insane. And I said it before this series started. If the Panthers win Lord Stanley's Cup, it is going to be because of the play of one Sergei Bobrovsky. And so far through one game of this series, that has been the case. 32 shots on goal he had to save, 6 of them from Connor McDavid. There was no reason why this game should have been a 3-0 win for the Panthers. The Oilers should have gotten a goal or two. But because of the play of Bobrovsky in the net, he kept it a shutout, and it was an easy walk-away win for the Panthers in Game 1. And another thing we talked about on the show before this series started was how crucial the power play was going to be, right? Because the Oilers were one of the best teams on the power play. It's scoring goals on the power play. And Florida was one of the most penalized teams as far as minutes goes. So Florida does tend to spend a lot of time in the penalty box. And the Oilers like to take those opportunities and turn them into goals. But Bobrovsky and the Panthers held Edmonton to 0-3 in power plays in Game 1. That is big. They need to keep doing that. Because here's the thing. With the way the Florida Panthers like to play, they're going to find themselves in the penalty box. That's just how it goes. But when you're playing a team that is so successful on the power play, as the Oilers are, you've got to shut that down anytime they have that opportunity. And Bobrovsky and the Panthers did a fantastic job of killing each and every power play in game one. The Oilers had three. They were successful on zero. You've got to keep doing that if you're Florida. If you can keep doing that, the Panthers could have a really, really good opportunity at finding themselves lifting that Stanley Cup trophy up whenever we're done with this series. So we'll have game two coming up, I believe, Tuesday night. I don't have it right in front of me, so off the top of my head, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, game two's coming up. Florida Panthers can kind of take a stronghold on this series, or the Oilers can bounce back. We'll see what happens. But, man, Saturday night was a good night if you're a Florida Panther fan. That is for sure. Caitlin Clark left off of the women's national team for the Olympics coming up later on this summer, so she will not be representing Team USA in the Olympics. Lots of people seem to have an issue with this. I'm not entirely sure I know why. Like, I get it. She's a dynamic player. I'm not trying to take anything away from her. But there are a lot of people that simply put are wanting Caitlin Clark on the national team because she's Caitlin Clark. But let me remind you that the national team, whether it be the women's or the men's national team for the Olympics, they do not pick off of fan favorites. All right, this is not an all-star game where fans can cast their votes online through social media and pick the all-star teams. It's not what this is. This is the best of the best going to represent the country. And if you look at the roster that they have for the women's team, I feel like they got the best. And I feel like I'm not quite sure who it was that made the comment over the weekend, because I just kind of heard it in passing. But they were talking about this, I believe it was halftime during the WNBA game between the Liberty and the Suns on ABC on Saturday around lunchtime. They were talking about Caitlin Clark being left off the team. And they said exactly what I just said, that it's not taking anything away from Caitlin Clark. It's just that roster is so good and so deep, there was really no need for her to be a part of it. And what I heard one of them say, I can't remember who it was at the desk that said it, but they said, look at the roster for the women's national team. Who are you taking off to put Caitlin Clark on? Right? That is a stacked team. It is a team that has an opportunity of bringing home a gold medal. That's how good of a team it is. It's a team that is capable of bringing home a gold medal on the women's side for basketball. So I think when you look at it, yes, Caitlin Clark was not put on the team. Fine. It's not a big deal. She's a rookie. She's going to have a long career and plenty of chances to make the national team for the Olympics. All right? In 4 years, when we do this again, I guarantee you she is a part of Team USA. I would even go as far as to say even this year, they still have not announced the alternates. I guarantee you Caitlin Clark is an alternate. Those get, I think, released towards the end of this month in preparation for the Olympics in July. So I really do think that Caitlin Clark, while she's not on the official roster, she's probably more than likely going to be an alternate. But again, we don't pick and choose the national teams like it's an all-star game in Major League Baseball or the NBA, where you can cast a vote online for your favorite player and get them to the all-star game. This is the cream of the crop. This is the best of the best that each country has to offer that's going out there and playing. Now, while yes, usually fan favorites are the best of the best in whatever league they play in, that's just not how it's done for the national team. Would it be smart for the women's national team to have Caitlin Clark on the team? Absolutely. Because people would tune in and they would watch. Even if they've got to get up at 4 in the morning and watch before they get ready for work, they're going to get up and they're going to tune in and they're going to watch. Right? Because it's just the Caitlin Clark factor. It's kind of what we talked about. Was it last week or the week before with the whole Angel Reese comment of, other people are, you know, celebrities are coming to games and people are starting to watch the WNBA for more than just Caitlin Clark. No, they're not. They're doing it for Caitlin Clark. Jason Sudeikis is not going to see Angel Reese. Jason Sudeikis is not going to see Cameron Brink. He's going to see Caitlin Clark. Right? He's wearing an Iowa 22 jersey. That's just how it is. So, yes, you can add Caitlin Clark to a popular vote, and it would be great. You'd get a lot of people watching. But you'd definitely be leaving off a veteran who deserves that opportunity in what could be their final Olympics. Because remember, again, this opportunity only comes around every 4 years. Caitlin Clark's still going to have plenty of opportunities to play for the national team. Let her focus on being a rookie in WNBA right now with Indiana. Let her focus on playing for the Fever and trying to help turn that program around. Because right now, that organization, that team, not exactly one of the best in the WNBA, right? So let her continue to focus on getting better herself and getting better as part of that team in Indiana. I got no problem with her not being a part of the national team. I know a lot of people think the opposite of that and think that she should be a part of it. But, man, you know what? Give her a couple of years. Like, you know, give her this year. Let her do this year. Let her figure out how to be a rookie in the WNBA. She can play a couple more seasons, kind of get into a better rhythm, understand how to play and prepare in the WNBA. And then once then the next Olympics roll around in 4 years, she's going to be more than ready to be a part of Team USA. It's not that big of a deal if she's not on it this year. Plenty more chances coming up. Juan Soto talked about his injury, how he left the game against the Twins Thursday night. We talked about that on Friday. He was supposed to have some imaging done. Good news is nothing too serious. A little bit of an elbow issue for him there. But did not play at all over the weekend series against the Dodgers on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But it looks like Aaron Boone is optimistic to get him back either tonight or tomorrow. So it doesn't look like this is going to be something that keeps Juan Soto out for too long, which is probably a good thing for the Yankees, because I would say easily this year Juan Soto has been the guy for them, right? I mean, and a team that's got players like Aaron Judge, to have Juan Soto kind of step up and be that top player, you know, you've got to have him out there. You've got to be able to get him out there and get him healthy. So I think they're looking at maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow night. But it does look like if you're a Yankees fan, you're not going to have to be without seeing Juan Soto too much longer. So that's some good news there for that team inside the AL East. Back to the NBA, a couple of stories here. The Los Angeles Lakers and Dan Hurley, obviously we talked about it last week. Some conversations about J.J. Redick, and it looked like maybe J.J. Redick might have been one of the top targets. And then all of a sudden, the next morning after that, boom, Dan Hurley. The Lakers have reached out to Dan Hurley. There was mutual interest. Dan Hurley flew to L.A. to talk to them over the weekend, sat down with Rob Pelinka, sat down with Jeannie Buss, and just kind of mapped out their plan for the future of that organization there with the L.A. Lakers and how he would fit into it and how they thought he would fit into it. And apparently they came away from that meeting with even more mutual interest. Dan had to, make that tough decision to think about things, right? He's got a tough decision ahead of him. Does he stay at UConn and go for a three-peat? Something that I have not seen a team do in my lifetime when it comes to college basketball. Or does he leave UConn and go take the head coaching job with the LA Lakers? I think he'd be a great fit with the Lakers. I think if he took an NBA job being in LA, being with the Lakers, first and foremost, the weather's going to be a whole heck of a lot better in LA than it will be in Connecticut. It won't be bad rolling up to play a game on Christmas Day. I know it's not Staples Center anymore, but it's Staples Center and, you know, some board shorts and flip-flops because it's 80, 90 degrees on Christmas Day, right? Can't beat that. We know what that's like living here in Florida. But it's also going to be a great fit for him because this is an organization that understands even if LeBron does stick around, let's say LeBron does opt out on June 29th, which he has the opportunity to do, but it's to restructure a deal with the Lakers, right? Like his plan is really not to dabble his toes into free agent. He just wants to opt out so he can restructure a new deal because that is something that is very much possible and it's what a lot of people expect LeBron to do. Even with LeBron sticking around and restructuring his deal, which would probably be max deal 3 years, max money, probably. But you look at that, even with him doing that, you're still going to be a team that's going to be looking to rely on a lot of young talent. And you're going to need a coach that's going to help develop that talent. And there's nobody else out there better than Dan Hurley when it comes to developing young talent. So I think it would be a great fit for them moving forward. I think he'd be able to get that team winning and honestly keep the team winning. We've seen him do it at UConn. They've won the last two national championships, right? So I think that he has a great opportunity with a great job here in front of him with the LA Lakers, and I think he'd be a fool not to take it, right? Not just because it's a great fit, but honestly, they are working on a pretty awesome contract apparently for him that's got a lot of money and a lot of time attached to it, meaning they want to keep him around for the long haul. And if you're a coach or if you're a player and a team comes at you with that type of offer because they believe in you that much, yeah, it makes it even harder to say no. So we should expect a decision coming up at some point throughout the day. And, of course, if it's him staying at UConn or if he's heading off to the Lakers, we'll talk more about it coming up on tomorrow's Glass Half Full. But one thing we did talk about with him going to the Lakers was if he does decide to take this job, LeBron stays in place for the Lakers. We did talk Friday a little bit about how the Lakers could really use some of their draft capital to go out and maybe trade or open the doors to bringing in other top-tier talented players to play with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And over the weekend, one of those talents just happened to be at a Los Angeles Sparks game. Jimmy Butler was watching the Sparks play over the weekend, and Jimmy was out there and was getting interviewed during the game. And as there, he's out there and he's talking about Cameron Brink, who plays for the LA Sparks. And if you're unfamiliar with the WNBA, the LA Sparks are basically the WNBA equivalent of the LA Lakers, right? The uniforms look similar, the logos look similar. They're both the same purple and gold colors. So very much they mirror each other in that sense. So, you know, Jimmy's sitting there and he's, you know, getting interviewed, and he does make the comment, 22 looks good in purple and gold. He wears number 22. So that got a lot of people thinking, is this Jimmy Butler being, you know, a little coy, a little sleight of hand, maybe tipping his hand over a place he would like to play in? We talked about them adding free agent guys. Talked about Paul George, how he could be a guy that gets added in because he could be potentially heading into some free agent markets this year. But how about Jimmy Allen? That's a guy that necessarily wasn't on the radar. But, I mean, if he's looking, the L.A. market, not a bad market, especially if you're going to leave South Beach. You're going to go somewhere. You might as well go to L.A., right? A team with Jimmy Butler, D'Angelo Russell, LeBron James, Anthony Davis. That's a pretty good basketball team right there. You throw in being coached by the great Dan Hurley. Whoo! If you're a Lakers fan, you got to be excited about that. But he did reach out and speak to somebody after he made those comments because, like I said, social media went wild after he said that. Everybody was like, oh, Jimmy Butler's going to be a Laker. He's going to go to the Lakers. He said, calm down. I was referring to Cameron Brink. We were talking about in the interview, Cameron Brink. That wasn't a play on me tipping a cap to where I could potentially end up playing if my time in Miami is done. I call BS on that, Jimmy Butler. But, because, I mean, think about it. Dan Hurley, LeBron James, all the names I just listed a moment ago. You're telling me Jimmy Butler wouldn't want to play for those guys or play with those guys? Come on, man. We know better than that, Jimmy. We know you would be salivating at the opportunity to play with the Lakers, and the Lakers should be salivating at the opportunity of having you play for the Lakers. So he can say, oh, I was talking about Cameron Brink all he wants, but I think, you know, he flashed that little coy smile of his, which we've seen a lot because he does like to play jokes. He does like to have some fun. You may remember he showed up Miami Heat Media Day, was it 2-3 years ago, as emo Chris Bosh, or not Chris Bosh. He reminds me of Chris Bosh. That's why I said that. As emo Jimmy Allen, you know, he had the hair, he had the wig on and the hair and all that stuff. He's just a goofy, fun-loving guy. So he did kind of flash that smile a little bit when he said it. But I think there might have been a little truth behind that. I think there might have been a little bit of a wishing upon a star, if you will. Disneyland right down the road from where the Lakers play. So we'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, if Jimmy Allen is on the list of star players you could bring in to help the Lakers play, it's not a bad name to have on the list. Not a bad one at all. Close out the show today with a little College World Series. Looks like a couple of teams from the state of Florida punching their ticket to Omaha. Florida State Seminoles and the Florida Gators took extra innings for both teams yesterday, but they were able to get it done. And, of course, we saw Florida sweep Clemson in their Super Regionals there in Clemson. And, of course, that was a 13-inning marathon yesterday. And then, of course, Florida State taking care of UConn, sweeping them. They needed 12 innings to take care of that one. Final score of that one, 10-8. So Florida State and Florida heading to the College World Series there in Omaha. And the fun thing is the way the brackets are lined up right now, the way that it looks is that they're going to be on opposite sides of the bracket, which means there very well could be a potential for a Florida versus Florida State College World Series. I would be okay with that. Nice little rivalry, best of three game series there for the College World Series. That could be fun. Now, if you match it off of the way the season went, very well could end up being a sweep for Florida State because Florida just did not perform well against Florida State this season. But I will, and on that point, I will credit Kevin O'Sullivan and the Florida Gators for getting to the College World Series because there were some points in the season where you didn't really think they were going to be able to make it to the College World Series. There were some points during the regionals where you were kind of questioning whether they could get it out of the regionals or not. But they passed the regionals. They passed the super regionals. They're in Omaha now. And anything can happen, especially now that you look at the bats throughout that lineup. It's not just Jack Caglione now. It's the lineup in its full entirety. It's starting to hit the ball well. So Florida's getting hot at the right time. Florida State has not cooled off since the start of the season. They've been one of the better teams throughout the country this entire season. And it's going to be fun with them being on opposite sides of the bracket because, like I said, we very well could have a Sunshine State rivalry for the College World Series in baseball. That would be fun. That would be definitely fun to watch. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola Podcast. Hey, have a great Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow.